From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
If you've just rolled the dice for some radio Christmas cheer, well, you've just landed a double 666 of bad draws and dumb luck, because it's episode 146 of The Dice Men Cometh! Recorded on Christmas Eve, December 22nd, 2016 on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name is Trent.
I am Mark, and someone is excited.
Yes, but it's not me, but I am Leon.
I can't wait for this bloody year to end.
Oh,
we're almost
with you
at Christmas. All the cheeriness in my voice, it's all fake. I'm dying inside.
Well, speaking of dying inside, we're going to talk about some of the games we've been playing, in particular one where usually, mostly, often, you die and or maybe go insane, which is, of course, Mansions of Madness.
It's pronounced Mansions of Madness.
Okay, 2.0. I, being away last week, get the chance to talk about my best games of 2016, and then we are all going to talk about the most anticipated releases we have for 2017. All that, of course, we've got a competition running. We'll talk about that. We've got so much stuff to talk about. It's going to be a big year next year. Until then, though, we will slide into a song.
Oh, you want me to play a song now?
And then we'll come back and talk some more.
Seamless. That was Sweet Release by The Paper House on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh. Well, wasn't that pleasant, lads? Now let's talk about something gruesome and horrible and blood-filled.
I'm filled with the spirit of Christmas, and it's just, I just want to kill someone. So, well, I just want blood and entrails in my teeth.
Well, you should play some sort of game with a similar theme to that, perhaps.
I know, perhaps. Mansions of
Madness. I don't know how that's
second,
pronounced.
Second edition.
Oh.
So this is what we've been playing lately, and this was also, Mark, you weren't here last week.
I listened live to Air Trent, every word.
How did we sound? Were we good?
You didn't say much about me. It was a good show.
Believe it or not, there's other stuff going on.
Really?
That doesn't involve you.
Really?
Sometimes.
Really?
Anyway, you're here now. And we're going to get your games of the year.
Games.
To make up for the fact that you weren't on the show last week.
Yeah.
You're going to give us a top five.
Yeah.
But my game of the year last week was Mansions of Madness, so there's absolutely no pressure at all in trying to sell how good this is to people. It's the second edition of the Lovecraft theme game that has you exploring haunted houses that inexplicably catch fire before being torn apart by beasts from beyond.
As you do. We've had a few houses in my street that are similar to that.
It's it's the better part of $150 to buy this sucker. Now, for anyone who's listening in the States, we do have some US listeners. That's about $108 US and the expansions and the additional adventures in the app, which is needed to play. And yes, you need an iPad to play this sucker.
Oh, so there's no Android version?
Actually, I don't know, but you definitely need the big device.
Yeah.
Who cares?
It's not enough.
Us real people can play it.
It's not enough just to be playing this on your phone. Okay,
you absolutely
need the big screen.
It plays a critical part, that's for sure.
Players are choosing characters with a variety of very important special abilities and stats, and you're exploring different scenarios. Best described as various haunted houses, I suppose. And the app tells you which tile to select from the little pile that you get. And, of course, if you've got the first edition of the game and you can integrate those into the new one. And it also tells you which tokens to place on each tile to indicate what items you can interact with as you wander around the house. There's an investigator phase, which involves taking two actions, usually moving and fighting something or trying to interact with something. And then there's, well, everybody gets to do that. You tick that off on the app. And then there's a
mythos
phase, in which
second edition,
basically anything can happen. I mean, usually there'll be Lovecraft-themed monsters that generate and attack you. And your characters will need to survive some horror checks, and some more on how that all works in a moment. But there can also be little surprise events, or maybe even nothing. It's quite random.
Yes.
The app does seem to generate a lot of random events.
Now, I have a question.
Yes.
Have either
Put
of you
your hand down.
Played... So used to being in school many years ago. Did either of you ever play Mansions of Madness 1.0, the original edition?
No.
Yes, I played it once.
Yeah, me too.
And never again.
It was all right, but by that point I'd already played Eldritch Horror, which I know you guys aren't as big a fan of as I am, but by that point I pretty much got halfway through and went, yeah, this is fine. I would have rather just played Eldritch Horror again, though.
Yeah, well, the experience for me, like, I really enjoyed it, but... really long, and I think the person who's playing the Game Master, so that's the thing about this new version, is just like Imperial Assault, the Game Master position is taken by the app.
Mm.
So in the previous version, the Game Master had to set up the whole map and board first, put out all the little decks of cards and everything, and I think Aiden spent probably 2 hours, the game that I played, before we all arrived, setting this whole thing up. And then, of course, you can see all the rooms. You can see the complete layout of the map from the start.
Right.
Now, you don't know what's in there, but you know this goes there, and then a room goes there, and then there's a dungeon there, and there's a greenhouse there, and there's a car in there. And
now it's almost more like it's procedurally generated.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not their preset scenarios, but it seems like that.
But you do get that. You do also get that sort of... like a computer game, you get that fog of war where you move into one room, and until you move into that room, you don't know what leads on from that room. Or even in one of the scenarios I played, you sort of walk down the street. At the end of the street, there's like a token where basically once you move onto that tile, you can then see further down the street. Mm-hmm. So you have that, like a computer game or like a fog of war approach where you can only see so far. So you don't know exactly, you don't go, oh, look, there's a huge big mansion up on the hill. That must be where we've got to go. You are uncovering it a piece at a time in this new version.
That's quite cool.
And as you wander around encountering stuff, the game basically boils down to just one dice mechanic, which is deployed in every different sort of scenario that you can possibly encounter. And that's rolling successes on a variety of D8 against a random series of challenges.
Yep.
You might roll... little elder signs as successes, or you might roll clue tokens. If you've got clue tokens to spend, you can turn those into successes.
Yeah.
And you'll need X number of successes to pass whatever challenge. Yeah. And that's really it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the whole game mechanic. So it's not sophisticated.
No, not at all. And look, I don't know if this is too early, but sometimes I felt like the game was playing me.
Well.
And sometimes I felt like I was playing one of those, like a Telltale game.
Yeah.
You know, where basically a story is unfolding and through a series of clicks, you make the story evolve and appear in front of you. But there's not a huge lot of interaction, maybe. But then again, it's so fun.
That's the thing. It's fun.
I think
the positive spin on that is that the app is immersive. Because it's not just generating monsters, it's also giving you puzzles to solve.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, where the app really shines. Because you'll suddenly get a little logic puzzle that you've only got X number of turns to solve, and the clock's ticking. You've got to get
solved. The puzzles in the app compared to the physical puzzles work really, really well.
I was about to say something, but then I actually had a quick think in my head that when I did play the original version, I was about to say the puzzle was by far my favourite part of the game. The reason I rethought it, because I think I might have been the other way around, where I thought that was the most annoying and pointless part of the game.
Ah.
It's one or the other, so I'll just be quiet and pretend we didn't say that. Edit point, Leon. Clap.
But hey, thanks for bringing that up.
Not a trouble.
There is a big variety of puzzles, though, and hopefully we'll see even more, because I do remember... in the version of 1.0 that I played, Aiden, our friend, had an expansion, and it was, I think it was called Forbidden Chemistry or something. And, for example, there was a chemistry puzzle where you sort of had to mix different potions together to create other things and not blow up. Because, can we say what the sort of puzzles we've seen, or are those, is that a spoiler?
Look, they're like little...
I've seen combination locks.
Yes.
I've seen where you shift a picture around and you've got to sort of put the picture bits in the right place. And I've seen one other one.
So they're kind of like things you would play on the app game, The Room. If anybody knows what that is. And if you don't, Google it and buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, as your characters are wandering around, there's equipment that they can use to help with these roles and special situations. It's all lovingly detailed in exquisite cards and art, as you would expect from a Fantasy Flight game. And they really don't disappoint with this one. The bling.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Characters can die or they can go insane. This is my other favourite part of the game, the mechanic for wounds and for taking sanity damage, taking it as face down or face up cards, and then sort of stacking them up, all these face down cards, and suddenly you might have to flip one up because you get wounded and that might make you flip some of the other ones up, and it just cascades and suddenly the game just tilts and it goes out of control.
Yeah, that's very clever.
And perhaps that's a bit random for some people?
No, I mean, it's similarly with the spells, where there's a number of different versions of each spell. On the face upside, you've got the spell and what happens. And then when you cast the spell, first of all, you've got to get a successful check. So you've got to check yourself before you wreck yourself. Then you flip over and there'll be some sort of a extra thing that might happen. And so if you passed your check and you passed it really well, nothing might happen. If you just barely passed, you yourself might suffer a bit of extra sanity damage or something, and then you cast that spell and then you get another version. It's not like Eldritch, where you know you cast a spell and then that card's gone and you don't have that spell anymore, which I love, because hey, I've spent all this time learning how this spell works. I shouldn't just be able to cast it once and then I forget how it works. But there are slightly different versions of the spell. So, yeah, the way the cards work, the double-sided cards, I really like.
Mansions of Madness is not a deep strategy game.
Oh, no.
lots of randomness. It's, I would say, virtually impossible to strategize. Would you agree with me?
Well, if that's the mechanic of the game, then that's good, as long as they do it well, I suppose.
Yeah, and particularly because you're never really sure what's coming up next, even though you might think, and it tells you at the start of the story, okay, you're here investigating a house. Or I played a big long scenario where we were basically exploring a town and the board basically reinvented itself three times as three different parts of the town. Then we had to go away and think about the stuff we had found out and then work out which of the characters we discovered we thought was involved in the plot, follow them, and then either we picked the right one or the wrong one, depending on which one we did, then something else would happen. It was actually really different. It was more like one of those point-and-click adventures where you run around exploring a whole bunch of stuff for more than half the game with no sign of any monsters, and then a massive, massive, massive battle at the end.
Now, what would happen, though, if you played that scenario again? I've played the introductory scenario twice. It played out more or less the same way. We beat it on the second time because we knew essentially which direction to turn as soon as we stepped into the mansion.
Look, I think with this one, because it's a case of, okay, there are these six or eight characters, two of them are involved in a nefarious plot. So you basically, it's as I said, this is why it reminded me of a computer game, because you basically got to go and talk to everyone, ask everyone about everyone else, observe everyone, visit them in their home or their shops or whatever, poke around, see what you can find, and then sort of come to some conclusion.
Sounds like an RPG.
Which ones do you think might be involved? And then depending on who you pick, that takes you in a certain direction. Now, so I think what they could easily do is just change it up slightly with who, because it is very sketchy. We got to the end and we thought, well, we narrowed it down to three, one of which we were reasonably certain and the other two we were probably less than 50%. I think they could just change the clues a little bit and it would easily switch around to someone else, which could change it up, although you sort of know where the end piece is going.
I think replayability may be an issue for some people.
Especially when you chuck that price into it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Just off the top of my head, there's two or three other games that, you know, have huge replayability you could buy with the same amount of money.
But yeah. For me, playing a game that somebody else has bought...
Well,
if we're going that route, then yeah.
Yep. And if you enjoy storytelling,
yeah.
If you enjoy surprises, if you enjoy teamwork, because it's not a game you can strategize, but it is a game that requires good, effective teamwork.
And I think
and the sharing of abilities and support for each other.
I was going to say, I think similar to Time Stories, and you know, probably a similar level of investment where you're looking at what, $80 for a base game that has one game,
yep.
And then you're looking at $30-$40 for an expansion that has one game, and then another expansion that has one game. Now, I think in the last week, they've released a software-only expansion with one new adventure, which I think was $5, which, like, that's really cheap. I mean, what other board game expansion can you get that gives you a whole new game experience for $5?
Yep.
And there's huge scope for that, as well as they're going to be coming out with hardware, as in box expansions, with more creatures. You've got the expansions that were out there for 1.0 that you can incorporate that give you a couple more expansions. I don't know. And I think, look, it's Fantasy Flight. They're not going to be backward in coming forward in getting out new material, that's for sure. You know, this could go on forever. So I think if you enjoy this sort of experience, I think it's really good value for money. And the minis are great. I mean, we're so lucky with our friend Aiden who painted the minis. Oh, and Starspawn. Have any of you seen a Starspawn?
Oh, yeah.
So I had seen Starspawn in the Arkham Horror game as, you know, a little square chit, which it looks fairly scary, but it's a small square chit. When your little miniature is standing in front of a full-size Starspawn miniature, and some of you can check out my photo on Instagram, the Starspawn miniature is probably about, 5 inches, 6 inches high? It's massive. Like, to scale with your tiny little dude, it just brings the whole thing to life.
I think Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition is accessible enough for pretty much anyone to join in. Thanks to the app, and I think the app is a really progressive element that is going to dictate the direction of many, many games like this for years to come. I think it really shows, I think it's really taking the app involvement in a game to the next level. Some might say that it makes it almost too much of a video game. Not for me. I love it.
Yeah, well, it has to be said, there's been games that have had apps in it before to some various degrees of success, but the fact of the matter is this game is generally reviewed very highly and thought of by a lot of people and is one of the games of the year for a lot of people. If it didn't have that app, it probably would have been, they did a reversion of it, it's fine, whatever. Well, that app made, from what I can tell, I haven't played it yet, I'm gagging to, that pretty much made this game what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there would have been no reason for a new version without the app. I really enjoy it, although I think I could see that there'd be people, I mean, there's so much flavor text and stuff in this, and I love reading out the flavor text, really getting immersed, and I could see people could just click through the app, pass the flavor text and stuff, and then all of a sudden...
Don't play this game.
Yeah, exactly. But I love the way the game walks you through the things like checks and things where it does all the work for you. You're not looking up rules because the app will step you through. That's brilliant.
All right, Trent's Game of the Year, Mansions of Madness, what we've been playing lately. Mark is so excited to talk about his Game of the Year. It turns into Games of the Year. We'll have to sit through those next. It's the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Sui Zen's Teenage Years, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Trent, Mark and Leon, talking nerdy at you. Mark wasn't here when we were talking about our Games of the Year last week, so to make up for it, always wanting to go one better, he's gone, six or seven better. You've got a whole list.
Top seven!
Well, considering I pretty much barely had one, it's probably good that you've made up for it.
Well, look, here's the thing. Before I start talking about the top seven of 2016, I started looking at this and sort of went, there could be top 700 because I don't know how you guys feel, but I feel like I've barely scratched the surface of games in 2016.
Yeah, but there's 50 games released every week.
2 minutes.
You know?
I mean, I feel like there's still so many games from 2015 that I haven't even come near. And then to stop and think about the year that had been of all the games I didn't play and who knows how good they are, what it made me realise, if I hadn't gone to PAX and if I hadn't gone to BorderCon, I would be so far out of the loop. I'd probably be talking about the top 12 games of 2011.
Oh, look, I don't think it's a reason to feel bad, though, because what are you going to do? You can't play games for a living yet.
Well, yeah.
Right? And
I just feel like there's just so many. It's so hard to get across. Just stop it. Stop making games. Let us catch up.
On that theme, before you get into it, my problem with it is that most games you play are going to be okay. Aren't they? They're going to be fine, but you want something that's actually truly special, and that doesn't come along all the
time. That's why I had trouble with my list, because I looked at it and went, I've played like, I don't know, probably 50, 60 games this year. Most of them have all been really good.
We enjoy them, that's what we do.
But nothing's wowed me at all. Yeah. That's why picking anything for the list was like, yeah.
Well, I think the other thing is, it's so hard to play anything more than once or twice and really get into the guts of something.
If you're trying to stay up with the hobby.
Exactly. Or rather than saying, okay, we're just going to play this one game for the next 3 months.
If we weren't running this show, we would just be sitting back watching everybody else's YouTube videos
and picking the eyes out of it.
Right. Yeah. And then we would probably save a lot of money and be playing a game flat out for 3 months and probably be a lot happier in ourselves.
And to be fair, we'd probably just be playing Cosmic Encounter every Sunday and having a few pints, which, why the hell don't we do this?
Yeah, all right. And this is the last show.
Yes, it's done. Yeah. We've clocked it. Clocked it.
Anyway, to bring things back on track, you know what I'd like to talk about?
What, Mark?
The top 7 of 2016. Number 7. You guys talked about it just last week. Mystic Veil from AEG, the card crafting game. And, you know, I loved it so much that it'll be up for trade on Facebook probably next week.
Really?
Look, I had a lot of fun with it, but in this day and age of pumping through games, I've played it 3 times.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to get back to it. And what I saw was, you know, there's one expansion out already.
Yep.
The reviews of that are more of the same. Doesn't really change it up. There's another one coming after that. And I think what I was really looking for was, are the expansions really going to change it up, add a lot more interactivity? Doesn't look like it. It's going to be a bit... Look, they may, but I don't want to wait for 2 or 3 expansions to come out before it changes, because by then I've invested $150, $160 and time. So, Mystic Veil, I really enjoyed it. It's very... it's quite an innovative idea with the card crafting, but we're going to move on from that.
It's got to get better from here.
Yeah, that's right. Number 6. We talked about it on episode 142. That is Tiny Epic Western from Gamelan Games. And I really liked how much of a game they packed into this tiny box. I've only played one of the other Tiny Epic games. I quite liked that one. That was the Tiny Epic
Galaxies.
Space Things. And
Space Things is a better title, to be fair.
This one, I really liked it. But again, I only played it once. I'd be happy to play it again. Number 5. Falling Sky, the Gallic Revolt Against Caesar, which is the coin game by GMT, Volko Runka. We talked about it in episode 123.
This is Asterix and Obelix done as a serious war game.
It is. That's the one. Garth and I played it.
I was excited there until you said serious
war. Yeah. Garth and I played it at BorderCon. And look, really, we talked quite a bit this year about the coin games. This is probably the most accessible coin game. So if you get a chance to, and you're interested in looking into these, start with Falling Sky. I really enjoyed it. I want to get it to the table again. I want to get into Andy and Abyss. I want to try Fire in the Lake again. It's a great series of games, the coin game. If you want to dip your toe into the war game world and you're an experienced sort of strategy Euro gamer, because it starts to meld those two. So,
and if you have the time to do it.
Yeah, and you've got to sink 3, 4, 5, 6 hours into these, but
to learn it,
but worth it, I think, worth it.
And it's the last show of
Number 4. Immortan. Oh. By Phil Walker Harding. He was robbed.
Yeah, he was.
He was robbed. He should have won the spiel for sure. If you want to hear more about this game, you know what? We've done a really good job of covering these games. Episode 124, you can listen back to that. And I think also episode 125, because episode 124 was the one that disappeared into the vault, and then we found it a few weeks later.
And if you're like, what? I can't find that episode, go on to dicemancometh.com.
That's right.
They're all listed on there.
Yeah, but look, Imhotep, a simple game, but with enough depth there to have you engage, with the big chunky wooden cubes. It has a good screwage factor where you can really stuff around with your other players, because there's some decisions to make there. They're not going to keep you thinking for days and days and days, but there are some interesting decisions, some fun decisions, and you do get to screw over your buddies.
Yeah, I was only just thinking, I don't know if we mentioned it when we had talked about it when we did the review, but there is that screwage factor, as you so lightly put it. And this is supposed to be like more of a kids' family type game. So it could be a thing that people need to look out for with that.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I love the idea of, hey, Dad, you know how you put those stone blocks on there because you want to take them to the sarcophagus? They're going to the quarry, dude. Bad luck, you know, and you've wasted those blocks. Like, the right kids would love that, you know what I mean?
That's exactly how kids talk.
Yeah, that's right.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was such a rad move.
That's right. Number three. Mansions of Madness, which
second edition
we talked about a few minutes ago, and I won't go into that anymore, but to say that I love it and I can't wait to play it some more. But it just didn't pip out my number one horror game, which, just to confuse you all, is at number two, Dead of Winter, The Long Night. Yeah. Now, and I don't know how much of this is just me loving Dead of Winter so much.
We disqualified this last week.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because it's not
losers.
Not really. It's it's. I mean, not really a 2016 release.
Well, I included it because you can just get that version. You don't need to have the other version.
True
it
enough.
Is standalone. That's why I included. Look, I love Dead of Winter. Talk about backstabbiness. Talk about fun. Talk about ramping it up with.
Talk about a horror game with scenarios.
Yeah.
Where you. That, yeah, that do stand up to replaying.
Yes.
Okay, because it plays out differently every time.
Yeah, and even the Crossroads cards, you know, the same cards might come out, but because they come out at different situations, there's still lots of fun. So, yeah, so I have loved that one. We talked all about it in episode 135.
Oh, you have done your homework.
I did, didn't I? Cross-referenced all of these because I realised, as I was going through the list, we had talked about all of these quite recently. So Dead of Winter, I'm loving it. But, look, I don't know how I feel about this, my number one.
Well, you put it at number one. That's fairly indicative, isn't it?
I loved it so much, but I've only played it once. And I know already of one listener who's gone out and bought this based on our review. And, of course, it's Terraforming Mars. We talked about it only two episodes ago. And, Trent, you rushed out and bought it. And it's...
Managed
just
to find
arrived.
One of the few copies left in the country available for sale.
And Look, I'm going to be turning up to your house unannounced at various times and dates over Christmas saying, can we? Come on. Terraforming Mars, please, please. Because I can't wait to play it again. Even just to see, did I love it that much? Was it that great? Or was it a romantic fling that I had with the little gold in silver and bronze cubes, or
Leon, you bailed on Terraforming Mars
famously, yes,
before it even got started.
Yes,
but
yes,
it was Sunday morning after in the middle of a long weekend. You knew you had more coming up that day, so you were saving your brain space.
Yes,
are you tempted now?
Oh yeah, I want to play it. I was just. It was a tactical maneuver. Yeah. I knew 5 hours of Lisboa, which is the heaviest game I've ever played, was coming up in a few hours, and I thought, no, I'm not. And we've got to remember, we're in an area where there was literally 10,000 people walking around us with lots of shiny things and cosplay and the prettiness and the stuff. I was just not in the focusing field. But, yeah, I've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah, so that's my number one game. I can't wait to try it again. I can't wait to try it with the corporations because we only played, like, the beginnery version. And I really do want to see how it stands up to multiple plays. I think it'll stand up really well, but it's so hard to say. And because I said, when I look at this list, you know, Mystic Vale I've played three times, amazingly. Tiny Epic Western once. Falling Sky once. Imhotep I played twice. Mansions of Madness twice. Dead of Winter. I think we might have played that new, the Long Night twice, maybe
times.
Three.
Times, yeah.
And Terraforming Mars once. Like, none of these games am I playing a decent amount of times that I could ever even think about writing a fair dinkum review, because I'm just not getting into depth with them. And this is my lament, because I quit. Oh, that's it. I'm going to play more games.
One thing, during our time of talking about the game of the year, has anybody mentioned Scoville at all? Did we not talk about it last
week? That's not a 2016 release.
Oh, yeah, I think that's 2015.
Okay. Anyway, that's a game that's really good that we all really like that nobody's talking about or playing, and they should be.
Well, I think that's why, maybe, because it is 2015, and we did talk about it.
Oh, we talked about it, but as in nobody else's.
Yeah.
We're the only people I know that have played it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a sleeper, I think, by TMG, which is a shame because it is a great little game.
That actually brings me to the point I was going to ask. I wanted to bring up what I'm calling the Leon rule, which is my game of the year last week, as you know, was The Grizzled, because I didn't play it till this year.
Yeah.
It didn't come out in Australia, as far as I know, till this year, as well as we didn't talk about it last year because it wasn't in contention then. Where would that factor on your list if you take that into account?
Probably number one.
Yeah, that's just wanted to bring that point.
I think that's also a game that we've played a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because it only takes a half an hour.
And a game we wanted to keep playing.
I might have actually named that as my number one game of 2015.
Yeah.
Which I think we might have talked about maybe early in 2016. Before the end of the year.
I'm not sure of the actual date-wise,
This is, back to my rant at the start, is how do you ever get enough time to play all these games to get a decent feel for them? I have no idea. And look, when we talk about the 2017 games that I'm looking forward to, which I think we're going to talk about after the next break, I'm going to have even more of the same rant because, you get a sniff of them maybe at a Kickstarter, and then if it's a Kickstarter, they disappear for 9 to 12 months and appear again. So the buzz has died down, or there's lots of hype and then they get delayed and then they end up being a 2018 game. I don't know. It's just hard to be excited when there's so many games coming out so fast.
So the Dice Man Cometh will return in just a moment with more fat old male white guy problems.
I'm not fat.
And that's on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Die, die, die with I Love Space Travel. Edge Radio 99.3 FM, the Dice Man Cometh. Been talking about our favourite games of the year, and now looking ahead to the games of 2017 that we are looking forward to scraping together enough time to play.
Yeah, right.
And if you're after more games to play, hey, we've got some to give you.
We are running a competition because there ain't no party like a Dice Man Cometh competition Christmas party game.
Party game.
Party.
Party.
Game.
We almost got it right.
That's right. Thank so much to our great friends and our friendly local game store, Area 52. We are giving away not one, not two,
but seven.
Not three,
no,
not five. It's four. We're giving away four games. The fabulous Sheriff of Nottingham, the also totally fabulous Sushi Go Party, the Lots of Fun and Full of Pun Pundernome, and Lil Cthulhu. We're giving away all those games, and all you've got to do to enter is find the mysteriously placed picture of Trent in a Christmas sweater on our website. That's dicemencometh.com.
Which is such a hit, my sweater.
Yes.
I've got to say, it's turning heads everywhere.
Anyway, find the picture, click on the sweater. It'll take you to a secret page on our website, which will tell you all about how to enter the competition. We're running it till the end of the month, and you can win one of those four fantastic games. Thank you so much to Area 52. You'll have lots of fun playing party games like we do.
It's our way of saying Merry Christmas. As we look to the year ahead, Leon, what are you looking forward to getting your hands on?
Well, I've got a few here in my hot little hand. The biggest one, the first one that popped in my mind straight away, Seventh Continent.
Oh, yeah, I got that.
Which is a game coming from Kickstarter, theoretically, in 2017. The best way I could describe it, it is like a choose-your-own-adventure book, so like those old fighting fantasy books, which are still brilliant to this day.
Steve Jackson, Ian Livingstone, I salute both you, sirs.
Yes, and I tell you what, if you grown-ups around a few pints and you read them out and get them to make decisions, still just as fun now as it was then. Back when I used to love a pint when I was 10. Yes, The Seventh Continent. So a game where basically it has like 1,000 cards in it, and you're on this island, and there's several different scenarios, and each scenario can take like 20 hours because every time you go to a new area, you're putting out a new card, which is like the terrain card. But as I said, there's 1,000 of them, so you could be turning over anything, yeah. Items, quests, events, monsters, new place, and it's actually got a save mechanic in the box.
I want to know how that works.
Yeah, because I have no clue whatsoever.
Yeah, well, it strikes me as having quite a few similarities to Time Stories,
yeah.
Where you're basically working through a deck of cards. You won't see those cards again.
Yeah.
The term Dexploration certainly fits it. And I'm excited that you've backed it, Leon, because I can't wait to play it, and you saved me some more money.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to it.
Now, can I jump in?
Mm-hmm.
One which you, Sir Leon,
yes,
loved so much at PAX. Mm. We all had so much fun, but unfortunately, you won.
I tend to do that.
Rule and Make and their game Unfair. The what's the word? Like the not
that's,
roller coaster
that's not
simulator.
Rule and Make. That was Good Games, wasn't it?
Oh, sorry. Why did I say Rule and Make? I've got them mixed up. I've got Hand of Fate on the brain.
The theme park simulator.
Yeah, the theme park simulator card game by Good Games. Unfair, which obviously has been on Kickstarter, was really, really successful. You know, and this is a point. Is that a 2016 game because all the excitement happened in 2016, or is it a 2017 game?
Well, no, because if it was a 2016 game, it probably would have been my game of the year. Because I think that playing that game on that night in that scenario, that was probably my favourite gaming time of the year, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. And yeah, it's a great game that I think is going to go gangbusters.
I'll jump in.
Yes.
Another Kickstarter. I think it's funny that a lot of these games are Kickstarters we've backed that naturally we are looking forward to. From the It's Not Rocket Science, No It Really Is category, High Frontier.
Yes.
I backed this in 2015. the Kickstarter has been an absolute train wreck. This is supposedly the definitive version of this rocket science solar system exploration game that uses
Phil Eklund, isn't it?
That uses actual orbital mechanics. Oh yeah,
yeah,
deep geek stuff.
Yeah,
I'm still looking forward to it.
Yeah, and this is where again we have this dilemma of, you know, you get excited about these games, and then because it's 18 months until they come out. Like when I started to look through this list, I went, oh yeah, that one. That was so 2015, but it still hasn't come out yet.
Yeah. Anyway, so next on my list, this would definitely be on Trent's list unless he's forgotten about it. Rising Sun. Was it the next one?
I've not forgotten about this, buddy.
Righto.
Oh, yeah.
So Eric Lang, the man of the last few years, pretty much. Mystical feudal Japan, blood rage mixed with Risk. I mean, just sign me up already.
Yeah, it's diplomacy is what he's referred to.
Yeah,
in this one, diplomacy in ancient Japan with those Eric M. Lang miniatures and the honor system, where you can make deals with your opponents, but if you Welsh on them, then you're going down the honor track.
You are going to go down the honor track, Trent, because I know you. You're a Welsher from way back, buddy.
The only problem I've got with Rising Sun, Leon, is which of us is going to buy it?
Both, probably.
You reckon?
Well, I know I will. And then you'll probably go, he's already got it. Fine, I'll let you buy it. I won't be much fine.
Anyway, look, something that I spent a lot of time listening to and learning about this year was the Dan Carlin Hardcore Histories podcast, and most particularly the War to End All Wars, the World War One podcast, which went over about 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah,
and
it's wonderful stuff. If you're looking for a podcast that isn't the Dice Men Cometh, it's a great one.
Coming up this year, it's a reprint of Death in the Trenches, the Great War, 1914 to 1918, which originally came out in 2005 as your old school sort of chit and counter war game. but there's not a lot of information out there. But I'm betting, because of the sensibilities of board games have come a long way since 2005, and you look at what's happening with war games with people like GMT, I'm thinking this could be really interesting, because there are so many World War II games out there, and you look at the squad leader and those sort of things. There's not those sort of great systems and great games around World War I, and that trench warfare period is so fascinating. I mean, it's horrible, 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 but it's also fascinating, and there's such depth to it, and every tiny battle has its own little story. So this is one that I'm really keeping an eye out for. Death in the Trenches, The Great War, 1914 to 1918.
Who's reprinting that?
I don't know, but not the same company that made it last time, which is why I think it's going to be not like an old school war game.
Well, speaking of war and modern sensibilities, you'll remember the computer game and the Kickstarter for This War of Mine.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right, which has been picked up by a Polish publisher, and it is an amazing-looking game that no one's played just yet. There are many different scenarios. There's a lot going on the board. It's all extremely colourful, marvellous design, and all with that crunchy, bitter edge that comes with knowing that you're playing a character that's surviving the aftermath of a war that's just torn your neighbourhood apart. Mm. It's a game that really hit home to a lot of people. Such a simple little computer game, and I think it was a natural one to make the jump over to cardboard. Very much looking forward to playing
it. Yeah, I really want to see... You know, I can see you playing through maybe a couple of scenarios, but, you know, with the computer game, I found myself, I just wanted to go back to it again and again and again, thinking maybe there's some hope on the horizon. I wonder how that's going to play out in the board game version.
Well, isn't that not the game that doesn't have a rule book? Is that not the thing, this War of Mines game, that all the rules are on the board themselves? I'm sure that's what I read somewhere.
I think there is. It does have that computer gamey situation where... You play a scenario and you're introduced to three or four rules. Then you play the next scenario and they introduce a few more rules, much like a computer game does with a tutorial.
From memory, I can't quite recall, but I believe it was a book that you played through. But it's certainly not like a Tales of the Arabian Nights sort of thing where it's random encounters.
Either way, it's going to be great. Mm. Two that I will lump into one because they're basically very similar. They're Kickstarter games, they're scenario-based, they have very lovely miniatures. One's called Lobotomy, the other one's called Pandemonium. Lobotomy is set in an insane asylum, which looks like fun, and Pandemonium is kind of an homage to all your 80s and 90s horror films. Like, there's a scenario based on Evil Dead, there's a scenario based on Hellraiser, there's a scenario based on Candyman as well, I think. They just look like fun, and they're right up my alley.
Those minis, you love them, don't you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, speaking of Kickstarter, look, I'll lob two in together. One of these we played at PAX, and I'm really interested to see the final version. That's Thornwatch, the game that's a combination of Mike Selinka with the Penny Arcade game. And we, guys, when we did talk about that, we played it at PAX. So sort of a little bit of a role-playing element in amongst a card drafting, deck building, fun game. And another one... Apocrypha, the adventure card game. I mean, I'm a sucker for adventure card games. I'm still playing the Rise of the Rune Lords Pathfinder. I'm playing it physically and on my app because I haven't caught up to where I am with the real cards and I don't want to pay out for more.
By yourself.
That's right.
Both formats.
Apocrypha, I'm really curious to see where that goes because it's the adventure card game, but it has a few tweaks in it, so I'm really interested to see where both of those go.
Look, generally I'm sort of going to be looking around for anything that isn't some kind of scenario-based sort of dungeon crawl, character-driven board game of treasure hunting and shifting motives because there's a lot of that right now.
There is a tad.
And, you know, sure, Lobotomy, you mentioned, looked interesting.
Yes.
I'm wanting something more like, you know, like one of my favorite discoveries from this last year was Voyages of Marco Polo, which is a great Euro game with a very, very good theme. So, I'm looking for something a bit more like that as well, something to actually take me back to
quote-unquote
classic
like
board gaming. I haven't, no, but that's what I'm going to be hunting, you know, on the lookout for.
Okay, well, what about, I've jumped the gun here, we've talked about this one a little bit, And I have this trepidation because we haven't really played through the iteration that we have, which is Robinson Crusoe, but First Martians, the Ignace Trevicek revamp of Robinson Crusoe on Mars with an iPad, story unfolding. That's coming out in 2017. I have loved Robinson Crusoe, but I still feel like I haven't played it enough.
Yeah.
But the Martian version is coming out.
Oh, we haven't even touched the Voyage of the Beagle expansion.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right, I will rip off the heavy Euro Band-Aid. Lisboa.
Oh, yeah.
Which we talked about and got to play at PAX. The best-looking board in board game history, debatably. And, yeah, and as someone that Euro games, it was a brilliant game and I loved it.
Look, I've got two more. One, and I didn't even really know it was there, but it's called The Captain is Dead. And it's basically you're on a starship, your captain
is dead.
Damn. And it's like, what are we going to do? We don't know what to do. And you have to play out basically the crew sort of working out what they're going to do in crisis situations. Bit like the anti-red shirt game where only the red shirts have survived and the people who know stuff are dead. I think it sounds like a lot of fun. I don't know a lot about it. And here's a sort of a, I don't know, it could be a big one because you guys are computer gamers, Hand of Fate. Now, I don't know much about it, but I know it's a big deal, and this is why I had Rule and Make in the mind, because Rule and Make are bringing out the Hand of Fate.
I don't know how
board game
of Fate.
Slash.
I have no idea what. I know. I've heard the words, but yeah? I don't know what
it
is.
Oh, really?
If it's a big PC game, I'm not a PC
gamer. Okay. But, yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to check it out. Anyway, there's a lot of excitement. You know, it's one of those story type games.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excitement about Rule and Make, a great Australian company, producing the board slash card version of that game. So that is 2017, and that is all I have on my list.
Which brings us to the end of the show.
Wow.
Now, is that the last show for 2016? Is it the last show ever?
Well, we don't know, do we?
it's very mass debatable.
Before we finish up, I want to give a shout out to our good friends, Five Tales Games. One of the five of them are Australian, but we got sent a copy of their game, Demon Espionage, and they've even got a little review from Garth on their website, on their Kickstarter. Now, it went to Kickstarter once, it didn't get up, it's come back, they've reworked it, and believe it or not, this game, the second time around, it was funded within 5 hours.
Yeah.
So now some of the stretch goals have been funded, but, you know, there's not a lot happening on Kickstarter with Australian games. So if you want to check out an Australian game, card games on Kickstarter, check out Demon Espionage.
From the Dice Men Cometh, we wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and a much better 2017 than we've had 2016. God bless you all. Thank you to everybody who's downloaded us and sent us messages on Facebook or and supported us in any way.
Did I tell you I've got some sort of Jangle Balls action happening around Christmas?
Jangle Balls?
Yeah, you know.
What?
As you get older,
what?
You sort of different parts of your body stretch and dangle more.
And on that note, we might say this is the last show ever.
Yeah, that's it. We're not going to get better than that, apparently.
Dice Men Cometh. Until next time, see ya.
See you later.
Do right.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.